Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Sunday evening. Joining me, you got it right. It's a Monday pod. Guess what? A little adjustment happening here. Taking control of this sucker. Joining me from New York City, where he was at the Philadelphia Boston game on Saturday night. One of the best games of the weekend. We had a bunch. It's Tim Bontemps.
Available for duty, sir.
And joining me from the American Airlines Center, he was flirting with getting banned, with tussling with a star player tonight. It's Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. I felt like all interactions were pleasant tonight. That certainly won't be the case going forward in this podcast. Twice a week now.
I'm not aware of what happened after the game, too. So you got to fill me in on that. I missed that.
I was
sensationalizing. He's exaggerating a bit. There you go. Sensationalizing.
Going forward until it's declared differently, Bontemps and McMahon are going to be joining me on Mondays and Fridays. There, I said it.
Yes.
Take the complaints to your local congressman or woman. All right.
That's an interesting place to take it.
We've had a lot of interesting stuff happen this weekend, but one of the more interesting games of the last few weeks happened in front of McMahon today in Dallas, where the Lakers were down 27 to the Mavericks in the first half, came back and won the game in a really key win for the Lakers as they try to scramble and get some momentum, and definitely a bit of a setback to the grand designs of the new look Mavericks as well. Back-to-back Sundays here, we have really good chances in Dallas to take a look at where some of these new teams are. Today, the Lakers and Mavs, and next Sunday, Suns at the Mavericks. We'll start with this one. McMahon, I think the stat that they showed on the broadcast was teams that were had fallen down this season by 27 were 0-138. It was a fascinating game just for that. And then afterwards, we had quite a press conference Dallas coach Jason Kidd and with Luka Doncic. Why don't you take us through the events of your afternoon and evening?
Well, Jay Kidd made a point coming out of the gates to say, and I'm going to quote him accurately, "We lost our rhythm in the sense of just playing the game and not worrying about the other elements. We were playing at a high level on both ends, and then we just got a little distracted with the whistle. We just got to be better with that." I don't know who might have gotten a little distracted with the whistle, but let's keep on going. And, you know, he got back to it later. Said it's just our maturity, just understanding that we have to do at that time. Just focus on that play. Can't get distracted with a whistle and just keep playing. You know, went on and on. And then Jay Kidd was asked, you know, basically, hey, as you guys are unraveling and you're blowing a 27-point lead, and especially like in the third quarter, like, bro, you only called one timeout the whole third quarter and you guys are pretty much melting down. So I said, in a little bit more polite terms, he said, "I'm not the savior here. I'm not playing. I'm watching just like you guys. As a team, we've got to mature. We've got to grow up if we want to win a championship. There's no young team that's ever won a championship mentally or physically." The young Dallas Mavericks had...
I was going to say, is it even a young team? Is it a young team? I don't think it's a young team.
There's
one guy that's young.
They're starting five today. Was certainly older than usual because Josh Green, who had been starting, did not. 22-year-old Josh Green came off the bench in favor of 33-year-old Justin Holiday. He started alongside Reggie Bullock, 31. Dwight Powell, I believe he's 31. Kyrie Irving, 30. And Luka Doncic, 23. So Jay Kidd
In his
fifth season. And like his 28th professional season. I think he's been a pro since he was in diapers
and,
over there.
And known to say a thing or two to the referees, and did a few times during today's game.
But yeah, if we're
but
talking
I didn't think
about,
it was egregious. No, I mean, I saw him throw today, his hands up a couple times.
Listen, I thought it was pretty egregious today.
He didn't get teed up, right? He could have. Like, let's be honest, Luka could get teed up every game probably multiple times, but he didn't. But this was definitely a bad body language game for Luka. And it was definitely I'm more worried about arguing every call and no call. He was more focused on the three guys in the gray shirts instead of the five guys in the Lakers jerseys. This was a bad game for Luka in that regard. And honestly, like, look, we all know Luka gets, he said it himself. He said, "Hey, I'm really not an angry guy outside of the basketball court. I don't know what happens to me out there." Call it competitive, call it immature, call it a combination thereof. That's a fact with him. And it's something that he's talked about before. It's something Jay Kidd challenged him on last year, and for a bit he got better. This was a bad game for him in that regard. And I was surprised for a couple of reasons. One, he's been so positive and so upbeat and so excited since the Kyrie trade and it wasn't just the bad body language to the refs. There was some bad body language to teammates. He just got frustrated today. And I do think Jared Vanderbilt's physical defense, boxing out and, you know, shoving.
Jared
and
Vanderbilt just his energy level versus Luka's in the second half. It was wild.
Yeah, he had 17 rebounds, 8 of those offensive. And like, Luka, bro, you're a good rebounder, but sometimes you got to put your big old butt on somebody and box out when he's killing you on the offensive glass. I think Vanderbilt frustrated him, and I think that led to a lot of this. Because again, Luka has been very positive, upbeat, excited lately. And he dominated the first quarter too. He was absolutely dominant in the first quarter, 14 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, doing whatever he wanted, controlling the game. And he stunk the rest of the game. The last 3 quarters today, Luka had as many turnovers as he did buckets. He was 5 of 14 from the floor after the first quarter and had 5 turnovers. And one of those was just an incredible mental blunder with the game on the line. Like, say what you want about Luka, he is a basketball genius. The guy is, nobody ever can question his basketball IQ. So for him to not understand, hey, you can step into the backcourt to take that inbounds pass that Kyrie intentionally is leading you into the backcourt and away from the defense to get, for whatever reason, he just totally brain farted.
Yeah, to update what happened there. Was it a 2-point game or?
It was a 3-point game. They're coming out of timeout with 18.1 seconds left. Vanderbilt's denying him. So Kyrie throws him a bounce pass, you know, away from Vanderbilt, again, leading him into the backcourt. All Luka has to do is step over the half court line, you know, catch the ball, and then, you know, go about getting him into whatever they wanted to get into. But he like tried to save the ball from going out of bounds. It's a loose ball turnover, you know.
The ball from going into the backcourt is what he.
That's what I mean. Going to the backcourt, loose ball turnover leads to free throws, and that's basically the game there. So this is twice in their 4 games together that Luka and Kyrie, with a chance to tie the game late, have failed to even get a shot up, which is just insane for two of the best shot creators in the NBA. The time before against the Timberwolves was a case, I think, of they were both kind of deferring, too much mutual respect. Plus, like we talked about this before, give Anthony Edwards and
McDaniels.
McDaniel. I always get Jalen and Jaden
botched. It was Jaden.
Minnesota McDaniels. Like, give them credit. They disrupted the play and played great defense. This one, like, Vanderbilt was denying, but like, it was just a total mental blunder. And I think Luka just, he was in a
bad. There was another possession in the last 2 minutes ish where he actually got the ball at the mid post of his back to the basket in isolation.
Yeah.
With position. And there was like 5 or 6 seconds on the shot clock and he gave it up.
Yeah, and then it's hot potato, and Bullock had to fire up a Taro's boom, 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 boom.
I wasn't sure if he actually got the shot off or it was a violation, but whatever Luka would have done there would have been smart. And I just kept waiting for, you know, it was a very classic modern NBA game because it was a highly leveraged 3-point shooting. The Mavericks, when they make like 13 threes in the first half.
Yeah, the Mavs made 20 threes. They were 20 of 49. The Lakers were 6 of 34. You should never lose a game where you have a 42-point advantage on 3-point shots. The Lakers, I think the Lakers missed their first 14. At one point, the Mavericks had 10 threes, and the Lakers
I think they missed their 14. first 18. Didn't they miss their first 18?
14, 15, 16, 18, whatever. Okay, whatever. It was
a very modern game in that
they missed enough.
We see huge swings in the modern game, not 27. Mm-hmm. We see huge swings, and it's a lot of times it's based on 3-point shooting stuff. But I think it's more interesting what Kidd was talking about after the game, Bontemps, because it seems like Jason made a decided effort to, or decided, I mean, made the decision going to that press conference to challenge Luca and the way Luca behaved.
Jason's not afraid to make points in press conferences. He's been doing that since he was in Brooklyn with me 10 years ago. He's done it plenty of times. Like Tim said here, he did it with Giannis and at times Jabari Parker earlier in his career, other guys in Milwaukee. He is not afraid to say what's on his mind when he's at the microphone. It was very clear he was making a point. Mm-hmm. And listen, I mean, the Mavericks were reprehensible down the stretch in this game. Final 2 minutes of the game, after Luka took a three with 1:45 on the clock, the only shot him or Kyrie took until the end of the game was after a horrendous air ball by Justin Holiday in the corner that Kyrie just happened to catch under the basket and lay in because he was wide open.
Oh, you talking about that lob that Holiday had from the opposite corner just over the rim to Kyrie?
Yeah, nobody finishes lobs like Kyrie.
That is ridiculous. So, you know, they just mismanaged the end of the game. You mentioned the turnover. There were multiple possessions where they got bad shots up. They came out of a timeout in those final 2 minutes and had a terrible possession where I think they had a shot clock violation on the play. Or basically did. I mean, they just had mistake after mistake down the stretch. And that's on top of the fact that Luka, after the first quarter, was just completely out of sorts. All the shots were short. He was getting it. You know, he kept being frustrated about non-calls. You mentioned the way Jared Vanderbilt played. His aggression definitely was factoring in too. But, you know, for a Dallas team that's got to try to figure this out on the fly, that's only got a limited amount of time, maybe with Kyrie to begin with, for them to be 1-4 with these two guys on the court so far, it's not an ideal start.
One and three, but I hear you. And all three are
all right. 1-3.
All three are. They had a chance to tie it up late in the game. You know, the first time in Sacramento, Luka took a tough step back, and then admitted after, and Luka had not scored in a while. Kyrie had been cooking. He admitted, "Hey, that was my bad. I should have gotten the ball." We mentioned the, you know, playing catch against Minnesota leads to a turnover, and then this one. And look, I don't want to get too caught up in still very small sample size clutch performance, because like these guys both have track records of being brilliant shot creators. They've both hit a bunch of huge shots in their career. I think they'll figure that stuff out. To me, the most interesting thing was obviously them blowing the lead and then J. Kidd making a point to, not by name, but certainly clearly call out Luka. And it's not the first time he's called out Luka. And honestly, I think every time it happened last year, it's like, I think Nelly used to say, you only have so many bullets to fire in a season, right? However many is, five or six as a coach. Every time Luke or J. Kidd fired a bullet with Luka last year, it seemed to work. I mentioned there was a time where he basically said, we've got to play 5-on-5 and not worry about, you know, complaining to the refs. And there's a time to complain to the refs, and it's not when we're supposed to be getting back on defense. And I thought that had a positive effect. The other time that really pops to mind is, I believe it was after game 2 of the conference semifinals against the Suns, and the Suns just lit Luka on fire. Luka dominated offensively, but the Mavericks got beaten. Luka, well, pick and roll. I mean, it was just brutal, the bullseye they put on him. And Kidd had done this a few times throughout the years. Said, you know, he's got to participate defensively, and you know, Luka took that personally and responded well to it. Initially, Luka did not seem very enthusiastic about this particular call out. I'll say that.
Yeah. So you, after when Luka came up, you asked him about it, and he said what?
Well, and so Brad Townsend with the morning news kind of asked him generally about a loss of composure. And, you know, he basically said, he kind of downplayed it a little bit. You know, you can say that, but we still had a big lead. Sometimes you're going to lose it. I think we just relaxed a little bit. We've got to work on that. And then I basically said, hey, Jake Kidd specifically mentioned, you know, you guys got to be more mature. You've got to grow up and you have to stop getting, quote, distracted by the whistle. And he said, that's probably true. I said, do you think you got distracted by the officiating? That's when he said, I knew you were going to be the one to ask me that question, which I said, hey, okay, but I think it's a fair question. And he said, like I said, it's probably true. So, you know, he certainly didn't shoot it down, but I've seen Luke, I'll say this, a lot of times Luke's, the times he's most quotable is when he's being accountable. Like there are many, many times over the course of his career where he has basically said, hey, I've got to be better. You know, I can't, whether it's come to officiating, now it doesn't mean it always happens, but he's many times has said, you know what, I'm getting too worked up with the referees. I got to just hoop. I can't be distracted with that. Or like when he plays like crap, a lot of times he'll say, it's my bad. Even like the backcourt plays, it's like, it's my bad. He started to cuss and then he's just like, I made a mistake. This one, to be as brief as he was with it and, you know, indicate like, dude, I don't like this line of questioning. You know, I'm not saying it's a big deal. I'm just saying it was interesting.
Well, the Mavericks fans, I think, are a little frustrated with Justin Holiday taking Josh Green's starting spot. I was a little bit mystified by using Justin Holiday as a primary defender on LeBron a couple times, but
well, I think for most of the game, and I would ask you, like, with Dorian Finney-Smith wearing a Nets uniform, who do you recommend?
Josh Green.
Okay,
they need to play Josh Green like that. That's what they have to do. Talked about it when they made the trade. That's what they have to do, you know.
And Josh Green really played well right after the trade, kind of didn't play as well these last few games, but he's a 22-year-old who's should be either a core player or, you know, a major piece in your next big trade. So I agree with you. He needs to play more than 15 and a half minutes in any game.
Can't be playing him over a buyout guy or a buyout guy over him. Like you need, if the Mavs are going to get anywhere this year, which is obviously the jury's out on that for a variety of reasons, Josh Green's going to have to be very good. And now, Holiday is not going to be good enough to get him there. You saw that today.
The other thing that people are upset about is that Dwight Powell played significantly more minutes than Christian Wood. You guys take any issue with that?
I mean, I don't think that decides the game. I think that's for Dallas Sports Radio to break down.
Look, the Mavs problem.
I think there are some direct messages that were sent about that, but I didn't get any.
Well, the Mavs problem is not going to be about scoring. It's going to be about their ability to guard people. You've talked a bunch about the impact Maxi Kleber can have on this team. We'll see if he could stay healthy. We've talked a lot about how Phoenix has a lot of guys with injury issues. Maxi's coming off this hamstring surgery. Who knows how he's going to be able to come off of that. Mm-hmm. But Dallas needs to be able to guard people outside of Luka and Kyrie. Like those guys did not play well down the stretch today. Like you said, they have a track record. You could expect them to play better in those situations. The bigger problem was at the end of the game, when it really mattered, the Lakers were getting what they wanted offensively and made plays down the stretch that Dallas didn't have answers for. And if they're going to win in the playoffs against, you know, whether it's the Clippers or the Suns or Denver or Memphis or any of these teams, they got to be able to get stops. And, you know, that's Dwight Powell is going to be a better option probably to get stops late in the game than Christian Wood.
Yeah, but from the Lakers' perspective,
I mean, that's a problem though. They don't have good options. Like that's been the issue since they made the trade, right? Like that's when you trade your best wing defender too, it is another problem.
My position on the Mavericks is they've got great cornerstones now and that you give them a transaction cycle or two where they can work on some supporting players.
Well,
I think
the problem is what if they don't have a transaction cycle?
Exactly.
That's the issue.
Kyrie and LeBron, just a big smiles, warm embrace post game. It was good to see. I mean,
well, listen,
really touching.
Regardless of whether Kyrie wants to go to the Lakers or not, the fact that it exists, that Lakers threat is valuable to him.
Oh, so he's got all the leverage in the world. Like, listen, the Mavs might have to give him a 5-year, $270 million max contract to keep him. That's just the fact. Hey, they gave KP a 5-year max deal with a freaking player option when he hadn't played in a year and a half. At least Kyrie's played.
Who knew Kyrie could ever win a showdown in terms of playing time? From the Lakers' perspective, they've won 4 or 5 now. Anthony Davis was his beast self in this 30 yep. and 15.
He was huge really, factor really good.
In the second half of this game. And, you know, the other night, Michael Beasley.
Malik, I do it all the time.
Malik Beasley is red hot and really carries him to that win. This game, he's cold. He's ice cold. But then Jared Vanderbilt has his best game as a Laker. You mentioned 17 rebounds.
Maybe his best
points.
Game, period. He was awesome.
Oh, my God. I mean, he made so many plays that doesn't, you know, the how many times he got his hand on the ball, how many times he frustrated
defenders.
Yeah, he got
4 steals. And again, I give Vanderbilt, I think Luka's angst with the refs was in large part caused by Vanderbilt's energy, physicality, probably hacking the crap out of him. But like, hey, you know, Luka really got upset when Vanderbilt got a offensive rebound off of a missed free throw. And Luka was like, dude, he went right over, you know, went over my back, shoved me in the back. And then Luka,
this is where we have a Pat Riley quote. When you feel a game like this, because you can complain about the officiating all you want and you can call out plays and show the video and you can be right. But there's a momentum that happens in games where the officiating just allows it to happen. And because it's sort of kinetic energy, and Pat Riley, would say about this, that you have to be an active participant in your own rescue, which is a long story about how he went on a whitewater rafting trip. And that was one of the things that they said, you have to be an active participant in your own rescue. And so you can't look for the referees to bail you out. Mm-hmm. And Vanderbilt was creating that kinetic energy that allowed the Lakers to come back.
And he was creating their full court nonstop all the time.
Yeah. Well, and so LeBron is pushing the Lakers, and in this game tried to push them. LeBron came out with a lot of energy in the second half because he sniffed weakness in the Mavericks, I think, the way they finished the first half. Mm-hmm. And Vanderbilt rose to the occasion. LeBron's picking up 94 feet in the first possessions of the second half. Vanderbilt starts doing it. And so no matter what we said about the Lakers the whole year, these last couple of wins are an indication of how much more improved their roster is. Go ahead, Bonta.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, what have we talked about for the past year and a half with this team? They have no defense and no athleticism, right? Like, the reason Jared Vanderbilt, he played very well today, obviously, but the reason he stood out so much was he was doing stuff the Lakers just did not have the guys to be able to do for the last year and a half. Like, ever since the Russ trade, they didn't have guys like Jared Vanderbilt on their team. Like, he's the kind of depth piece that you need to have to win. And look, Malik Beasley's going to have a lot of games where he goes 2 for 11 from three. That's really sort of who he is. He's going to have some games where he hits a ton of threes. Mm-hmm. He's going to have a lot more where he misses a lot. He's a 35% volume 3-point shooter.
He's going to take 11 of them, though. And by the way, he hit a huge one that was his 10th. He was 2 of 11 from three and hit. It was not 1 of 9 and hit a big one on his 10th.
No question. And they have no shooting, right? Like, just having a guy that can get up 11 threes is going to help them. But,
gotta guard him.
You know, yeah. But like, having a guy like Vanderbilt who has athletic, who can guard multiple positions, who brings real energy, they just haven't had guys like that. So, yeah, obviously it's helped the Lakers a lot. They've picked up a couple really big wins to come out of the break. But, you know, they've still got a very big hill to climb. There's a lot of teams to jump over. They got to keep winning games. LeBron, again, looked like he messed up his right foot today. He's getting that worked on. Like, they've got to keep doing this for another 20 games. And, you know, we'll see where they're at. But this has been about as good of a start to come out of the break as it could have had. Not only have they been winning, but all these teams around them keep dropping games. And, you know, they need both to happen to get in, but it's been a very good start.
So the Blazers are playing right now. And by the way,
what the heck
Lillard
was that
has
13.
I'm looking. The Lakers are up to they're the 11 seed, tied for the 11 seed, baby.
We'll see what happens with the Blazers tonight. And by the way, Lillard has 13 points in the first 7 minutes of that game. So who knows?
Well, they are playing the Rockets. They are a record-setting defense.
I'm gonna go ahead and pencil in a Portland win.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So they're 11 right now because the Thunder are about to lose. It's about to go final.
They just did lose. Yeah.
Okay. So they're in 11th as we're speaking in our real time, but they may be back to 12. It'll be interesting to see how many points Lillard puts up in this one tonight. Okay. So,
and by the way, real quick, one thing to mention too, just with the way this weekend has played out, Sacramento pretty well positioned to be at least the 3 seed. They got a 4-game lead in the loss column on Phoenix. They got a 4-game lead in the loss column on the Clippers. They got a 5-game lead on the loss column on the Mavericks and the Warriors. As of now, Warriors are playing tonight against the Wolves. So Sacramento, unbelievably, is looking pretty good to not only be in the top 6 and guarantee being in the playoffs for the first time in 17, 18 years. They look like they got a real shot to have home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs, which is an unbelievable accomplishment for Mike Brown and that team.
Yeah. And we can talk about, hey, they don't guard anybody either, but they score over 120 points a game.
Well, none of these teams guard anybody. Yeah. Look at the game they played Friday night against the Clippers. I mean, nobody was guarding anybody in that game. They're going to score 175.
Does he have 7 straight games of over 30 points in a row now? I think
something like that.
Yeah. Tonight. He's been great.
He's been great in crunch time. They're undefeated in overtime games. It's been an awesome season for Sacramento.
He's the front runner for the Cojones Factor Player of the Year. I don't know what the hell they're doing with the Jerry West wannabe clutch player of the year, but Cojones Factor. I don't get a vote on that other one, but Cojones Factor, he's the absolute front runner. And by the way, what a Clippers debut by Russ. I mean, 17 points, 14 assists, got completely lost in the last play of regulation when they're up 3. And for some reason, he's guarding Malik Monk, who'd been lighting him on fire. No screen set or anything. Russ just gets caught watching the ball. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm guarding the guy who's been sizzling. Whoops, there's a wide open 3 to tie the game. Well, I mean,
it was the exact Russell Westbrook experience. So he, again, you could edit together a highlight package where he had some really good plays and he had 14 assists. Mm-hmm. But then you say, okay, he had 7 turnovers and he also blew like 3 layups, which I think led to easy baskets the other way. So
basically, another 3 turnovers.
Those are turnovers. Yep. Yeah.
They're live ball turnovers and you miss a layup.
All right. Jackson's got it for me. 7th straight game with 30 plus, and I think it's 8 out of 9. And it's a 6th player with 30 plus points in 7 consecutive games or more this season. So De'Aaron Fox,
he's doing it efficiently too. He's not just putting up, he's not going 9 of 26 from the floor.
Yeah. Been an incredible season for them. Just very fun. And they're pretty well locked into that 3 seed. I think it's going to be really hard for them to fall out of it.
Yeah. Well, you're going to be susceptible anywhere in the West this year, because I mean, you may be better off in the 3 seed than you end up in the 1 seed, depending on where the Warriors are and their health wise. So, but if they get home court, it takes a lot of pressure off a team that hasn't played in the playoffs together, at least gives them a real fighting chance.
For sure.
All right. So we had a significant move in the NBA today. In the coaching ranks, Quinn Snyder accepts a job. I think Woj said it was a 5-year contract for huge money. I believe it's for more than $40 million. And Woj says, and this mirrors what I've heard, that he's going to have some level of say over personnel moves. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. It's surprising to see that a coach of this caliber wants to take over a team in the middle of the year. Although, by the way, the Hawks have won a couple here, and on Sunday, Trae Young hit a very impressive game winner. Trae Young's already got a catalog of game winners in his career. In this one, he was able to get Mikal Bridges off balance. It was a terrific maneuver because Bridges, I mean, you're taking Trae Young on Mikal Bridges. I'm taking Bridges on that matchup.
Right.
Obviously great offense beats great defense, but I huge disparity in size, and Bridges is so competent, but he got tricked. Trae Young tricked him, convinced him he was going to shoot. He went up in the air, he moved over and he got him, and they beat the Nets by two. I often say that if you fire a coach, unless it's a disaster situation, you better damn well know who you're going to hire. Because I see these teams who fire coaches who it's borderline, you know, I'll give you an example. The Charlotte Hornets last year. It's not that James Borrego was threatening Red Auerbach. That team had gotten better 3 years in a row and didn't make the playoffs because of some circumstances. They fire him. They don't have their act together. They end up hiring Kenny Atkinson. He backs out of the job. They end up going back to Steve Clifford, and no offense to Cliff, but it hasn't worked out this year. They were firing a coach who was doing a good job, and they didn't know who they were going to hire. Not that Nate McMillan was, again, Red Auerbach, but if you're going to fire him in that situation, you better know what you're doing. They did. It was pretty telling when Landry Fields, the new GM, at the press conference announcing the firing, said Quinn Snyder is the candidate for the job.
Which also gave Quinn all the leverage in the world, not just to get.
I suspect it might not have been the first time they spoke.
Oh, for sure. But my point is Quinn was going to get exactly what he not just wanted, but feels like he needs to have a chance to win in a place where, honestly, like, do you think Atlanta is, would you call Atlanta a good NBA job right now? Given the issues with that roster and what they've given up to put that roster in place. Job.
I'm surprised he took this job at this time. He has his reasons. I was talking to a longtime executive in the league who I really respect recently. And I was, lamenting that Atlanta was underachieving. Mm-hmm. And he goes, are they underachieving? He's like, I'm not so sure they are underachieving. I kind of think maybe this is who they are.
Well, they made a huge win now trade. And if you're 500 after making a win now trade, you're underachieving based on your own expectations. Now, you can argue, is this roster better than the record? That's a different argument. But you don't give up three first round picks, two of your own unprotected, to go get DeJounte Murray unless you think you're a team that's going to win this season.
They certainly thought that. But Bontemps, you think there's a reason why Quinn wanted this job now?
Well, I think, look, if like you said, if you're a guy like Quinn Snyder who has options, and we all know he would have potentially had options to wait and see where he wanted to go, if you're going to take this job in the middle of the season, you're going to step in and coach the team over the final 20 games, and you're going to like launch right in now in the middle of a playoff chase and take over this job. It's because, like McMahon said, you go to the Hawks and you say, hey, I want A, I want B, I want C, I want D, and I want E, or I'm not going to take it now. And they say, sure, we'll do all those things. Now, we'll see, the devil's in the details on all this stuff. We'll see exactly how it all shakes out. But to me, there's very little doubt that for him to walk into this job now, it's like McMahon said, it's going to be everything that he believes he needs to have in place to be successful. And as a coach who, and again, I'm a big fan of Quinn. I think he's did a terrific job in Utah. He's a really good coach. He's also an incredibly meticulous guy. He wants things to be done in a certain way. You see it how his teams are running.
That's not even, it's, you're putting it sort of softly. He's extremely
He's a control freak. A lot of coaches are.
Yes, there you go.
Yes. Quinn is, aside from Rick Carlisle, Quinn is as much of a control freak as a coach as I've been around.
Well, and I think Rick Carlisle is an interesting guy for you to bring up, not only because you know both those guys, but think about the job that Rick walked into in Indiana, right?
Yes.
Rick has a significant say in personnel there. Rick has a lot of control over what's going on there, and that really fit his personality. And I think if you look at this Atlanta situation, I think it's a very similar deal. Quinn's going to walk in. It's a young and experienced front office led by Landry Fields. He's clearly going to be able to have a say in what's going on there. They have a bunch of talent on the roster. They've got really dynamic, explosive guards in Trey and DeJounte. Quinn obviously showed in Utah he's able to really, you know, turn Donovan Mitchell into an all-star player. They had terrific offenses every year. He's a guy who's, I think, going to be able to get the best out of those guys. They've got young athletic players around them. AJ Griffin, they traded for Sadiq Bey. They've got Onyeka Okongwu. There's a lot of talent on this roster. They've got Clint Capella. Like, there's John pieces Collins. To work with there. John Collins. And by the way, John Collins is another guy who, for whatever reason, past few years, his name has been in trade discussions constantly. He has.
The reason is because they've been trying to trade him.
Well, I know. But
honestly, since before he signed this contract, remember they went to the East Finals.
Yes.
Like, well, crap, I guess we got to pay him now.
Right. Well, and what I was going to say was that's all true. And my point was, for a guy like Quinn, I think he's got the ability to come in and find ways to utilize John Collins that can sort of get him back to the player he was a couple of years ago before his name kept coming up in these discussions. And it seems like his confidence taken a bit of a hit. He's become more of a bit piece there. So, like, I do think there's a lot of talent there for a guy like him to be able to walk in, put his imprint on the place, build his own program, have a ton of say in how it all comes together. I think it makes sense for him to take this job. And again, the timing of it to me indicates that he said, give me these five things and I'll do the job. And the Hawks said, great, come on board and let's do this.
Well, look, and
one of his big challenges is going to be to get Trae Young to perform at a high level with his limitations in situations where relationships with him sometimes are difficult. And Trey has been outspoken this year, and he doesn't think he's been treated fairly and that people don't know what's really going on inside that team. He said it again the other day in trying to defend his relationship with Nate McMillan. The last two head coaches with Trey have not ended well with Trey, no matter how you want to clarify it. Sometimes Trey can be a tough player to play with. So Quinn is coming from a situation in Utah where chemistry issues undercut what was a very successful operation. So he has now got to try to solve a situation where there are chemistry issues that have existed in the past, and he's got to deal with them going forward. He has got to figure out a way to make DeJounte Murray and Trey Young work together and be comfortable playing together. Because if they are not comfortable playing together, they're going to have to trade one of them because they cannot let DeJounte Murray walk away. Now, that's not a decision for right now. That's not a decision necessarily for this summer. It is
this summer.
Absolutely.
This summer, there's certainly a sense of urgency this summer.
I'm not saying
you have to make the move this summer, but
it does feed into what Quinn could do for this last, 6 weeks plus the playoffs.
100%. I think taking the job now, one, gives him a chance to go ahead and, he wants to, trust me, Quinn's going to have some very strong ideas of how he can instill his own, the culture he wants, how to change the culture there, how to, do all those kind of things. It also gives him a chance to evaluate the players that are on this roster. And for a coach who's going to have significant say in personnel, I think that is important. I think these 20 games plus whatever postseason there is, which if they don't get their act together, might be a game, gives him a chance to really evaluate the guys on the roster because they are, every team has major decisions to make every summer, but the Hawks in particular might have some like franchise changing type of decisions to make.
Yeah. So, I also wonder, so they traded Kevin Huerter, who's been a significant contributor to the Kings, because at some point they weren't going to spend to a certain level. And I don't blame them. Atlanta has got to be careful with the luxury tax. I don't know if they can keep this team together, how expensive it's going to be. DeAndre Hunter's new contract kicks in and they're going to have to take care of, they're going to have to take care of Murray if at some point. So
yeah.
I think they're headed for changes anyway. Whether or not it's John Collins or not, but I don't think
the Murray trade, which made the Murray trade, where you're giving up two of your own picks, such a massive risk.
Well, I guess you could argue that there was three that they got, but they
one is that one is that like the pick they get, the Charlotte pick via New York they got for Cameron.
Oh, that's right. That's right. It was two of their picks plus that.
It's honestly probably not even going to be a first round pick, but we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, but I also, they got a pick back from Sacramento for Herter. So it's kind of like net. It was kind of like Herter and two picks that they traded. They also traded Danilo Gallinari. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think who else they sent to San Antonio.
Who cares?
Basically, the Herter, they had to trade away Herter to make that feasible. Yeah. So I always look at Herter as part of that trade. Yeah. But there has been only a few coaches in the 20 years I've covered the NBA. There's only been a few coaches who have gone on to a team at midseason and taken over and made it any length of time. One of them was George Karl. George Karl did it in Sacramento, but the reason the Sacramento did it was because he did it in Denver and then coached the team for like 6 or 7 years and had some 50 win seasons and was good. That's the one successful time I can remember in the last 20 years. Maybe there's another one I'm forgetting. I think Lawrence Frank took over the Nets on an interim basis when he got his first job from Byron Scott. And he coached them several years.
Nate McMillan did get to the conference finals in a similar position a couple years ago.
Frank Vogel did it with the Pacers, but that is guys who were in-house who got promoted. Right.
Oh, you're saying from outside, right?
A guy
they
bring in from outside. Like
maybe Lawrence was on Byron's staff. So that's the
right.
That's
and the Frank Vogel thing. Was on
Jim O'Brien's staff.
Jim O'Brien's staff. Yeah. So
Don't see many outside the organization midseason takeovers. I mean, Chris Finch in Minnesota, but it's not like this is a frequent thing.
Right. Where it's worked. I mean, Finch, the jury is still out on, you know. So we'll see. Although Finch has done a good job so far. Yeah. Okay. Before we go, how about the New York Knickerbockers? Sort of sneaking up on everybody here. Won their fifth straight game on Saturday. They've won 8 out of 10. 5-0 since Josh Hart came into the lineup, and he's been very successful for them. He's shooting the ball really well. He won't shoot the ball like this. He's shooting 60% in those five games, leading them in plus minus in those five games.
Well, he was refusing to shoot the ball at times in Portland, so they'll just take him shooting threes, let alone making them at 60%.
Right. He's only shooting three a game, so I'm not going to overreact here.
That's fine, though. But if he does that, they'll be okay.
It's been a real nice jump start to their starting lineup. Jalen Brunson's been playing great. He's over the last 10 games, averaging 28 points, shooting 53%. Julius Randle has obviously had a couple of terrific games recently, 40-point games.
Jalen Brunson, since New Year's, is averaging 28.6 points per game.
You can make an argument he's better. You can make an argument he's a better player than the player that the Mavs just traded a bunch of stuff for, and they could have had him on the team. But that, as we've talked about many times, is
Ships are sailing. By the way, in that same span, Julius Randle has averaged 26.8. So you're basically getting 56 points.
They've been playing great
a game from those two guys.
Right, and Mitchell Robinson is now back, and he's not a perfect player, but he's an impactful player. He's an athletic
7-footer who plays hard.
Fits Tom Thibodeau's system very well. Big physical rim protected center who gobbles up a bunch of rebounds. This is exactly what he wants.
One of the things that we've said a lot in the last couple of months or so is, everybody's so tightly botched. It's just maybe it was a Freudian slip. Everyone's so tightly bunched that if, you have a good couple of weeks, it can change your whole world. Well, this is the case. The Knicks have had a couple of good weeks, and Brooklyn in front of them has, taken itself apart to a certain extent. They've dropped 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
And here they are. They're tied for fifth with Brooklyn. They play Brooklyn again on Wednesday. But Bontemps, they get to put this to the test on Monday night because they play the Celtics at home, right?
At MSG. Yep. At MSG. Monday night.
Great opportunity for them to put this to the test. The Celtics just had a spectacular win in Philly.
That sure, you were there. Sure was fun.
You can talk about that for a second. But like, what are you seeing from the Knicks here?
Well, look, it's like you said. I mean, Tom Thibodeau, there's been a couple times this year. I mean, you go back to December. I think it was December. It was either November or December. Cleveland came in. Donovan Mitchell's first game at MSG. Mm-hmm. It was a Sunday night game. And the Knicks had lost a few games in a row. Donovan Mitchell was in the house. They hadn't traded for him. And people were not sure what was going to happen with Tibbs if that game went a certain way. Like, I don't know how close anything actually came to happening, but there was definitely some trepidation around the team about
who knows what would have happened if Donovan put up like 48 and like danced around the garden.
By the way, how about if we get a Cavs Knicks 4-5 series?
I'm getting to that. So they win that game. They go on a run. The Cavs come back again after a little bit of a dip. The Knicks beat them again at the Garden. They go on another run. And now they're sitting here in sixth place. The Nets. Yes, they are tied for fifth. Nets have one less loss, which is what I was looking at. But like you said, Cavs Knicks first round, that'd be awfully juicy. I could have some fun watching Donovan Mitchell going up against the Knicks after all the chatter about that trade and about the decision the Knicks made to not pursue him as hard as maybe they could have for Cleveland to swoop in and get him at the last second. That'd be a hell of a first round series. But look, I've said it a bunch of times this year. The Knicks deserve credit for putting a bunch of singles together for the first time in a long time. They haven't really got a ton of credit in New York on a daily basis, I don't think, for the fact that they did sign the single best player to change teams as a free agent last summer in Jalen Brunson. Got him on the team.
Single best since Kawhi.
Maybe. I mean, I'd have to go back and look at guys that changed the free agency, but with the cap being flat the last couple of years, not a lot of guys have. But Jalen has been everything this team needed. Julius Randle is back to playing the way he played a couple of years ago when he was an all-NBA player. He was a deserving all-star. Jalen easily could have been an all-star, probably should have been with the way he's played. And Tibbs has got these guys playing Tibbs ball. They play incredibly hard. He's got them playing at a much faster pace than his teams are usually played in the past. They guard people. They get out and run. They go 10 deep. Josh Hart is everybody's favorite Nick here in New York City already. He does all the kind of lunch pail stuff that people here get excited about. Our buddy Worldwide Wob is, posted videos of him diving on the floor and going crazy. it's been,
hey, Emmanuel Quickly is a nice young player on both.
Terrific. Terrific six man. Like he's fit into probably the perfect role for him. Just come in and score off the bench. They've just done a really solid job. Quentin Grimes was a great late first round pick. He's a really good wing defender, 3-point shooter. RJ Barrett's taken more steps forward. I mean, they just have a very solid, good, hard playing team. Now,
let me tell you what that looks like
in the first round, but
let me tell you what they have. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. The They are a good team with assets.
I was going to say, right. They got all those, you know, they got all the
they've
draft
got
picks.
Young they're, players.
They've got like carton picks. Cigarettes and the pokey, buddy. They can make all kinds of deals.
You got to translate that on a Texan for all of the rest of America.
They can figure it out.
You know, they're not a perfect team, obviously, and they're 2 weeks, you know, they're two bad weeks away from being back in ninth. But
well, the thing is, though, they're not really now, because they've sort of been in that 6-7 range most of the season. They're now three losses up on Atlanta in eighth, or two losses up on Miami in seventh. Miami's fallen off a bit of a cliff lately. They're playing.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's really happened here. So they've won 5 in a row. Miami's lost 4 in a row.
Right.
And so they've built a little bit of a moat on the sixth seed.
And Brooklyn, to your point, has dropped back down. You're right. Because I thought it was. Go ahead.
They're a playoff team this year. They're not a threat. Like, they're not a threat to beat the Sixers or the Bucks or the Celtics. We understand that. They are a superstar away from being a real threat, but they are in prime position to be able to deal for a superstar. And by the way, the fact that the Knicks are so primely positioned, like, you say, well, why did the Mavericks pounce on the chance to add Kyrie, knowing all the risks contractually and otherwise? Well, because, like, there's no guarantee that they were going to be able to get the next one that became available, right? Because there's the Knicks and other teams are much better positioned.
Well, and the thing that's different about where the Knicks are at now compared to where they've been is, for so long, the Knicks were trying to get the quick fix, right? It was like, oh, let's jump it. Stephon Marbury and Steve Francis and Eddie Curry. And you go over the years, they kept jumping at like the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And even when the one time they sort of did this was the 2 years that Donnie Walsh had with Mike D'Antoni, where they got Amari, they drafted Gallo, they had Wilson Chandler, they built up a bit of an asset base. And then they had the chance to get Carmelo, and they threw everything out the door and traded everything for Carmelo. And then they could never build a team around him that was good enough to really be a factor.
Well, the key there is Melo could have waited until the summer.
Right.
I understand. But my point is that
and they could have had Melo and those pieces.
I understand. My point, though, is that they jumped too quickly and gave away all the, they gave away the whole store and then had nothing
left. What's that have to do with the manual?
The point is they've done this in a way now where they finally, after decades of not doing it, have methodically put themselves in a position where they have a good, solid team. And if they do find the right guy or two to add to it, then they do have a chance to be a legitimate championship team or championship contending team, like the Sixers and like the Celtics, who, as you said earlier, I watched that game in Philly on Saturday, one of the best games of the year, up to and including Joel Embiid letting this shot go perfectly in line with me from the basket. I could see right away it was going to be late. And as it's flying, I was like, this thing is probably going to fall in. And it's just going to be a mess. Of course, drops right
Mike
in the
Breen,
basket.
I mean, if you go find the clip of Mike Breen calling the Tatum three that won the game with, what was it?
1.5 or 1.3. Okay. Right. They needed,
if it was 1.5, it'd probably
that's
been
right.
tied up.
That's right.
Tate, you know, he got a bang from Tatum, and then Breen's reaction when Embiid threw in the 65 footer or whatever it was.
Well, the funny thing was about that. The Sixers immediately knew it wasn't good, but they were the only ones in the building who weren't sure. The Celtics were like, oh no, we just messed up. Every fan was like, oh my God, the game is tied. This is the greatest thing of all time. But Joel instantly shook his head and walked off. The Sixers were like, yeah, we lost. And then the Celtics
the officials didn't even have the headset on yet. And Joel was in the locker room.
Yeah, he knew the second he let it go. And it's funny, he talked after the game. The reason he had to let it go that extra bit of a second late was because Derek White was right there and he had to go around him and get it off. And Derek White was plus 25 in 25 minutes in that game. Celtics are the deepest team in the NBA. They're finally healthy, though Jaylen Brown isn't going to play because of personal reasons against the Knicks on Monday. The Celtics have to play Derek White heavy minutes going forward. He is such a good player. He's a critical part of what they've been doing. Even with Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown out recently, they've been rolling because Derek White has been awesome. And I know they've got Malcolm Brogdon and Grant Williams and Horford and Robert Williams, all these guys to play. Derek White has got to play a lot. And as far as Philly goes, Paul Reed plays 5 minutes, was minus 14. Time is just a flat circle in Philadelphia. for 5 years have been around this team, and for 5 years they've had 700 different options to try to play a few minutes a game in the playoffs behind Joel Embiid, and none of them have worked. Well, maybe this time they'll have. I was going to say, maybe they'll have PJ Tucker do it
as a backup big option. I mean, listen, you need Philly's... to stop on Giannis. You know, get a ladder out there and I'm blanking on my man's name, former six man of the year.
I'm not sure which guy you're talking
Montrezl Harrell,
the best. Oh, Montrezl Harrell. I thought you were making.
You know
a
what's sad about
first.
Montrezl Harrell? I was in Phoenix the last few days, and I watched the Thunder play the Suns on Friday night. Isaiah Joe put in 28.
Boy, he's been.
He had
nice
24 tonight.
Hey, he had 24 Joe, tonight. When the Mavs had that massive meltdown where they blow a 16-point lead in the last 4 minutes against OKC earlier in the year, it was SGA and Isaiah Joe. He came in a little thin. The man
Isaiah Joe is just a total fine for the Thunder. The Thunder are losing. Shea hurt his hip and has missed a couple of games. They're not going to make the playoffs, I don't think, which means they get another lottery pick. But the Thunder are just putting together little wins, and Isaiah Joe looks like he's one of them. And they cut Isaiah Joe to have room to sign Montrezl Harrell. Although they signed Montrezl Harrell first, but it made it so that Isaiah Joe
was the roster spot that he took. And the only other thing I'll say real quick about Philly is on Thursday, they're down a bunch to Memphis. They come back and win. It was the fifth or sixth time they come back from down 15 or more to win. Even though they lost that game Saturday and blew a big lead, they were down 10 with 6-7 minutes to go. Looked like the game was over. They came flying back again. They've just really got a different kind of edge and toughness to them than the Sixers have had in recent years. I don't know if they're going to be good enough ultimately to get by Milwaukee and Boston.
I agree. Daryl Morey has done a good job since the Harden trade to stock this roster. I just jabbed them a little bit on Isaiah Joe, but they have made good moves. They are a good team. Harden is playing well.
Harden's been great.
Brilliantly.
Embiid's
the move from Maxey to the bench. Maxey has embraced that and it's working.
DeAnthony Melton was an awesome pickup. He's been great. Yeah. I mean, they've done everything right.
They're really good, but I just don't know if they're good enough in 2023. This isn't the wrong year.
To me, they're very clearly one of the three best teams in the league. The problem is the three best teams in the league all play in the Eastern Conference, and so one of them isn't getting out of the second round of the playoffs.
There's that East Coast bias. I know they just beat the Nuggets, and the Nuggets just got their pants pulled down in Memphis, but I still think we got to include the Nuggets in the conversation for the best team.
You can include them if you want. I think the three best teams are in the East. I think if Philly was in the Western Conference, I think they'd win the Western Conference playoffs.
Also, what about those Lakers, baby? Aren't we contractually obligated to hype up the Lakers? The best.
Let me just say this.
I can no longer call them the best 13 seed in NBA history.
Got to slide them up or wrong.
I'm going to say this about Boston. This is where Boston kind of rises above everybody in my mind. Now, let me just say, Milwaukee's been banged up, so they're right there. Boston is 20-10 on the road, okay, with the victory in Philadelphia being a prime example of a grade A road victory. They've got a number of those this year. Denver's 15-15. They both played 30 games. So to me, to be a championship-level team, that's the kind of profile of a championship-level team. They go on the road and handle their business because you know in the playoffs you're going to end up having must-win games on the road. And look, Denver may be able to do it. My admiration for Denver has only grown as the season has gone along.
Philly, by the way,
how's your admiration for Denver grown as the season's gone along when you can't even watch the freaking Nuggets games?
It's hard. It's hard, man. It is hard.
What do you admire? Their box scores?
I was in
the Golden City on the Hill, Omaha, Nebraska, where you can't watch a quarter of the NBA because there's blackout rules covering massive chunks of the country.
Well, I get to watch them when they're on national TV, and I was in Phoenix on Thursday night, and I watched them play in Cleveland and without Aaron Gordon, and they were extremely impressive in that game because the Cavs played well.
Fortunately for you, you were not able to watch them Saturday night in Memphis, which I was. Wasn't one of their better performances.
Not pretty.
Okay, well, that's the thing. That was on the road. I mean, so was the Cleveland game, but, you know, they win one, they lose one on the road. That's, you know, if you're looking for, to me, the differentiation between and Milwaukee is 17-12 on the road, and they haven't had
Philly's 15-11. I mean, Philly's got a big month coming up. They got a ton of tough games in March, but you know, the other thing about Boston,
I get the Knicks are 18-12. So screw what I said about them being a superstar away. Well, I guess
the funniest thing about the Knicks season is that they're 17-15 at the Garden and have lost probably somewhere between 5 and 10 excruciating games at MSG. Like they could easily be the four seed if they just hadn't choked away several,
which is why they get one more player. And now we're cooking with
not
this.
One more player. Sure. One best player.
Right.
Okay. Right. But their position. And by
it
the way,
it is an important detail though, to McMahon points out. It's not just another guy. Another really, really good guy.
Right. They don't have an all-star, even though Brunson should, I guess they Julius was an all-star. Yeah. Julius.
They don't have a superstar. They have a couple all-star caliber players. They need a superstar. Well,
one more thing that they have also is that they also have Evan Fournier and
time in France. Evan Fournier for the Americans.
Yvonne is what they say in France, and I didn't want to be looked at sideways. Fournier.
Yes. We know anyway, about the Knicks contracts. They have contracts they can trade.
Well, right. They could have gotten rid of him, but they kept him to potentially use in trade.
Yeah, they have contractual pieces they could trade. They got a lot of stuff. The other thing that's worth pointing out about Boston too, you mentioned superstars. Jason Tatum Saturday, he hit that shot at the end of the game. He was not very good at all for basically the entire game, and it didn't matter because the Celtics have so much depth. These other guys like Derek White, Jaylen Brown was awesome. They have a ton of depth across the roster. Guys to step in and make plays.
You know, the Spurs just don't trade guys who get better. You know, DeJounte Murray was a contract decision. They didn't
trade guys who get better when they're about to go tank a palooza, bro.
No, they've never done that till
now.
I think they've lost 14 in a row.
The Celtics made
who's counting?
We've talked about it before.
Let me double check that, but I believe it's 16 after loss in Utah.
16 in a row. They're going hard after Victor. We'll see if they get him, but. We talked about it.
Houston's staying strong though. 8 in a row. They should stand below.
Hey, but the Hornets are suddenly winning. Like, what are you doing?
Wow. We'll see what
it's
happens.
It's very Hornets of them.
But I talked about it from the moment they made that Derek White trade. Brad Stevens, as he's come in this job, you know, there's a lot of time for years. Danny Ainge was like about to trade for a bunch of players over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown in place, you know, we just talked about the Knicks not having the superstar. The Celtics had the all-NBA wing players you need to win.
Yeah.
Brad Stevens, since then, goes out and gets Al Horford, beloved player on this team from when he was here before, has immediately slotted in.
Had a great
in
game on grade. Saturday, too.
Goes and gets Derek White, has slotted in from the moment he got there last spring, was a huge part of them going to the finals. When they get to the finals, they don't have enough offensive shot creation and, you know, dribble penetration off the bench. They go trade
ball
for Malcolm Brogdon.
Just straight ball handling.
Right. They go get Malcolm Brogdon, another depth piece they could bring off the bench. Like you were watching this game last night or Saturday night. They've got Grant Williams, Derek White, Malcolm Brogdon coming off the bench, and Philly's playing Jalen McDaniels and, you know, Paul Reed. And like, it's just not comparable.
By the way, and what did they give up for those players? Like, I mean, Aaron Nesmith has shown a few moments in Indiana this year.
Well, they gave up a first round pick in each of those trades, and it
picks
was worth it.
Going to be
of those
28th, 29th, or 30th.
Well, like, and it's just they've got the depth pieces they needed because they had the stuff at the top. And Brad Stevens identified needs and fixed them.
Yeah, the trade for Brogdon, they cleared out a bunch of roster spots too.
Yeah, went and got Luke Cornett, who's played really nicely for them. They signed Sam Hauser. They've developed him. They've done a great job filling out their bench. They've got Pete Pritchard, Sam Hauser, and Luke Cornett not even playing. And those guys would help a lot of teams on a nightly basis.
Peyton Pritchard was the seventh man in the finals last year. I mean, maybe he was the eighth guy. But there were nights where he felt like he was the seventh guy because Williams kind of fell away.
When we get into
away.
The Peyton Pritchard part of the program,
we got to get McMahon home.
McMahon's tired. I just think it's interesting when you look back at Brad Stevens last year coaching the team. They basically had five guys the whole year. And I think it's interesting from the moment he got into this job running the team as the president of basketball operations, he's kept adding these solid depth pieces into the roster. Now they got the deepest roster in the league.
I just realized, McMahon, next Sunday night when I'm there with you, how are we going to do this podcast? Because I got to fly home.
Well, we'll figure it out.
We'll just do it. All right.
Hey, you know, Bontemps and I will be available.
All right. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Thank you to McMahon and Bontemps. Thank you, listen to Hoop Collective. Everybody have a good week. We'll talk to you soon.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.